Hello, I'm Jo Tomlin, talking with two theatre makers. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Julian Spooner.
Hi, I'm Matt Wells.
And what do you both do?
So we both run the theatre company Rum & Clay. We met at the Jacques Lecoq School in Paris way back in 2009, and we've been running the company together since 2011.
So what style or genre of theatre did you plan to do when you started Rum & Clay?
Well, I guess we started as a physical theatre company, but it's quite a broad term. And obviously we met whilst training at Lecoq, so we had a sort of shared interest. But that's evolved to really just we like telling stories. And that can come about in many different forms. And we're not really bound by that physical theatre, but it's sort of within us and informs what we do. So we sort of stretched out sort of our repertoire the more we've made work.
And this latest production, The War of the Worlds, could you tell us a little bit about that, Julian?
Yeah, so that came about through New Diorama Theatre, who are an amazing organisation in London. They've started doing this pioneering kind of five-week seasons and giving companies five-week seasons in London, and really supporting theatre companies from the ground up, really. So they were asking for ideas, and we came across War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. Was out of copyright. We're always looking for incredible stories and departure points which are out of copyright, so we can mess around with them and do whatever we want with them, which is also what we did with Stefan Zweig's the Royal Game. So that was nice, and then that title led us on to the Orson Welles version of the story, which was broadcast in America in 1938 as a fake news bulletin, which caused certain amounts of hysteria. And we just thought that was a very prescient story to be telling now. And we found all these all sorts of kind of strange parallels between 1938 and where we ended up setting the show in the run-up to the 2016 US presidential elections, just before the Second World War, and just before the presidential elections. There'd just been a lot of terrorist attacks, and there was a sort of a general heightened sense of hysteria, and we wanted to explore how that could prime a population to react and believe in a fiction.
Obviously the issue is quite complicated, and there's lots of different facets and reasons why it happened, and not everybody fully understands it. So, you know, the War of the Worlds is a great metaphor to talk about that through something else. So we didn't want the piece to become conceptual. You know, we wanted it to be a good story that you're engrossed in, that allowed the audience to sort of make up their own minds or bring their own ideas to it, and it challenges each and everyone in their own different ways. So it's sort of we used War of the Worlds to talk about something else.
So Matt, once you've found this idea, this story, take me back to the beginning of how long ago was this a germ in the minds, and then what was the first thing you did after you finding the story and creating?
As Jules mentioned, you know, it sounds sort of quite macabre, but H.G. Wells' novel was out of copyright, so you'll probably see a few War of the Worlds. We were never really ever going to do a traditional take. And this was about 2 years ago. We started, and then as Jules said, we found the radio broadcast. And then from there, we started to dig into the genre of sci-fi, and just also to look at disinformation, fake news, why we believe in stories, and then stories more broadly. And, you know, Jules has mentioned this in previous interviews, that, you know, talking about truth and lies or things that are true or false in a medium that is inherent, you're lying to the audience. That's the theatre. So there's lots of things swirling around, and we also knew that sci-fi is predominantly a male-dominated genre, which ultimately led us to Isley Lynn, who is a sort of really exciting up-and-coming writer. She won't be up-and-coming for too much longer. She'll be quite established soon. But she brought a really different take to this piece, and she was really excited by it. Also, Hamish McDougall, who has worked a lot with comedians and also is a great theatre company in his own right in Kandinsky, works a lot with them. So we assembled this great team as well as creative. And really the way that we work is that it's a devising process where people lead. So Julian and Hamish led the directing, but everybody else's voice are chiming in. So we had several devising processes over the years, and we sort of would then obviously would go away and write from that. And then we came back, and in really a relatively short period of time, it was about 3.5 weeks before we first performed at New Diorama, and we had a wonderful 5-week sellout run. And then it was from then that we then went and redeveloped again before Edinburgh.
And one of the fun bits of research that we got to do and I got to do was I'm half American and my mum lives back in the States in New Jersey, and I decided she only lives about 40 minutes away from Grover's Mill, which is Orson Welles, where Orson Welles decided to have the Martians attack. So I said to my mum, I was like, would you mind us going one day and visiting Grover's Mill and see what's going on? And I'd read about these things that happened in Grover's Mill that from the broadcast. So they have there's this ancient, quite beautiful water tower, actually, which was supposedly shot at because people mistook it for an alien tripod. And there's a whole cafe there which is dedicated to the broadcast. It's one of those kind of like novelty Americana cafes, which I'm kind of fascinated by. And then there's a park which has a plaque in it, a commemorative plaque to the invasion itself. And there was just something kind of fascinating about the kind of the modern mythology, which happens particularly a lot in America, but is more and more prevalent here too, where stories and fiction are woven on top of reality, and they've just become blurred and interlinked. And a lot of those kind of investigations and stories found their way into the final show, because we thought, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if we're talking about storytelling and modern storytelling? Well, the podcast is the 21st century. Someone telling a story in your ear around a campfire.
I mean, how often do you hear someone say, oh, "I heard it in a podcast," and that it's almost you cease to investigate any further beyond that. And there is this notion that, you know, how could people believe that aliens invaded? That we wouldn't fall for that now, when, of course, you know, you don't have to dig too far to see a number of times that people, and you know, I count myself in this, where, you know, you regurgitate information that's sort of half truths, and then that sort of snowballs. And it was that slippery process, a slippery relationship with the truth, and we sort of used that as a sort of guiding principle in the show. The narrative was slippery, the characters were slippery, the way that we transported back and forth, we were sort of, it all had that feeling that sort of like, you can never quite grasp what it really meant or what really happened, and so then you start to talk about something else, something bigger.
Incidentally, if you do want to listen to some, I just compiled a podcast on the Rum and Clay SoundCloud. So if you want to listen to all of the field recordings I did when I went out to Grover's Mill and interviewed people in the cafes and stuff, you can search on SoundCloud Rum and Clay the Rum Diaries, RHUM Diaries, which is a play on Hunter S. Thompson's book.
How much dialogue and narration came from the team, the creative team, you, the actors, directors, or was it all written by Isley?
No, it's the way, I mean, it's some scenes Isley just went away and wrote. But a lot of it was, there was the seed of an idea, we would improvise, she would record everything, she would write it down, and then she'd basically make us sound eloquent. You know, you sort of cut away the fat, so to speak. So, you know, that's how we make work. We cast theatre makers rather than actors. So everybody is throwing ideas, and, you know, we encourage all, you know, Isley at certain points was talking about movement direction. Hamish at certain points was talking about sound design. Ben, the sound designer, because it plays a big part, would come in with different things. You know, we encourage that. Obviously, there are roles, but if you were to try and separate who said what line, it's nearly impossible.
Yeah. So it's truly, yeah, we try and create an atmosphere in the room which is truly collaborative and quite democratic. And obviously, as Matt said, people are leading on roles, but there shouldn't be this kind of, I'm so dead against this kind of old traditional theatre hierarchy where, there's a writer and director at the top of the pinnacle and then everyone else is kind of, shuffling around in the corners.
The basic idea is that we're all pulling in the same direction, so like rather than... there needs to be a competition of ideas within the room because you want the best to win out, but then everyone needs to be supporting each one. So Isley, it's not all on Isley to write everything, even though it kind of is, but it's sort of like we're all there, we're all chiming in. It's the same with directing, same with sound design, lighting, everything. The idea is that we attempt to be as ensemble as possible.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very much for talking to us this afternoon.
Not a problem. Thank you for having us.
No worries. Thanks very much.